and all, once again, to Nerds on the Rocks, episode 126. We're coming to you, we're coming to you on the Friday that this goes up, and, you know, partially is because our normal hosts are still in flux with their own life, so we've pulled from the Twitterverse to have two guests on. We have Trent from last week.
Hey.
And we have Justin.
Hi.
This week I wanted to try something different. Well, somewhat. We don't really talk about games much on here because we do have a dedicated gaming podcast. But I figured for more broad stroke on concepts, topics, like we can have a discussion here. And this week we just wanted to touch on video games that have a continuous narrative. Partially because we just got God of War Ascension out this past week. And we're getting Gears of War Judgment pretty soon. I think it's next week. It might be the week after that. Which are two franchises that do have a storyline that connects through multiple titles, and I just wanted to take a look at that and how it works in video games and some good examples and some bad examples of that. So, I mean, we might as well start off with the main two that we're having this show for. What is your two exposure with God of War and Gears of War franchise? Don't all speak at once.
You can go first.
No, I didn't even hear the question, so...
Oh, I say, what is your exposure to Gears of War and the God of War franchise?
I personally only played the first two God of War games for the PS2. I don't have a PS3, so I haven't actually invested the time. I liked the first two. I like Greek and Roman myth, so I thought it was kind of neat, but I did find the action kind of repetitive. I know that there's a lot of God of War fans that would hate me for saying that, but I've played all the Gears of War games, and I like those, but it's essentially the same schlock every game. Like, there's nothing really new, you know?
Well, I mean, that's where you're missing the deep emotional connection that you have to the characters of Dom and Marcus.
Oh, I'm sure Cliffy B would agree with you, but outside of the homoerotic subtext, I didn't really see much going on.
Well, I guess you just didn't understand it.
Understand story, bro.
What about you, Justin?
With Gears of War, I've played every game like Trent since the first one came out. I like the second and the third a lot more than the first. With God of War, I have only played, for some reason, I only played about like at least an hour or so of the PS2 trilogy, or the original trilogy, but I know what happens in each of them.
Okay.
So it's like, I know how they end, I know how they begin, but I don't entirely 100% know everything that goes on in between, except for like some stuff with God of War 3.
Okay, as for me, I have played God of War 1 and 2 recently on the God of War HD collection. Yeah. I know how God of War 3 starts, which was kind of... I played the God of War 3 demo before I played God of War 1 and 2, and after playing God of War 2, it makes sense. But it also kind of ruins God of War 2, but we'll get to that in a second. Gears of War, I've played all three games. I'm not really looking forward to Judgment right now.
Judgment is a weird game.
Well, I think Judgment and Ascension are weird games, which is one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up, because I think, you know, especially with narrative-heavy games that have kind of a beginning, middle, and end, it's really odd when companies start to try to expand on it. And that's kind of what's happening with Ascension and Judgment. I mean, God of War is a bit more flexible with that, because we all kind of mentioned that we've touched on, or at least know about, the PS2 and PS3 versions. But there's also two, like, PSP games, which are kind of, like, semi-prequels. I think Ghost of Sparta is a prequel, and then there's one that takes place between 1 and 2.
Right. Was it Ghost of Sparta, or was it... I thought that was Chains of Olympus that did that.
I don't know.
All right.
I, I mean, and this is something we'll get to in a bit, but, you know, it's one of those things where I don't really feel any more emotional connection with a franchise if it has a storyline that kind of runs throughout multiple games. In my experience, it might help to turn me off to a game more than helps me to get into a franchise.
The thing with the God of War prequel.
I think sequelitis can actually really do a lot of bad for franchises. I know. Back when Kingdom Hearts, for instance, came out, everyone loved Kingdom Hearts, and then Kingdom Hearts 2 came out, and everyone thought it was awesome. And we haven't even seen Kingdom Hearts 3, but by the time Kingdom Hearts 3 comes out, it'll be the 8th game in the franchise, and chronologically speaking, the 6th. So it doesn't make any sense, you know.
Wait, this game set after Kingdom... Well, I mean, we don't know where Kingdom Hearts 3 is going to be set. This game set after that, or are there, you mean games that are set at the same time?
Well, technically speaking, it is going to be the last, at the end of the chronology, but it's just like, you would think it's like Kingdom Hearts 1, Kingdom Hearts 2, Kingdom Hearts 3, but it's not. There's a prequel, there's Kingdom Hearts 1, there's Chain of Memories, there's... Coded, there's Kingdom Hearts 2, and then after that, there's two more. So,
aren't some of those just director's cuts of the original two games, though?
No, those are the those are 1.5 and that sort of thing. Those actually haven't come out yet.
These are like actual real
games. These are full games. There's a prequel, there's a main game, there's two side games, there's another main game, there's two side games. So... Which I'm sure if you were to ask Tetsuya Nomura, he would say that they're all main games and it's just a big series, but it really, like, I tried playing the 3DS Kingdom Hearts, and I didn't know what the hell was going on. Like, I didn't understand what was going on with it, and I've played the game, and the story has just become so dense and convoluted, and it is a huge turnoff for the franchise. I don't even see how new people could get involved at this point.
Yeah, and but you also have Kingdom Hearts fans. I've only played bits into the first one, but you'll have Kingdom Hearts fans who will say, like, oh, it's not that complicated, it's very simple.
Okay, but those are probably also some people who love the Metal Gear franchise, because I've heard numerous things about the Metal Gear franchise, like, oh my god, it's so complicated, but then fans of it are just like, it's not complicated at all, it's easy if you follow it.
Screw those people. I'm a fan of those games. I love the Metal Gear Solid games. And that franchise is convoluted as hell.
I mean, but Metal Gear, I think, is a different beast. Because even in, like, a single game, it can be kind of convoluted. Because you're, like, the twin of your father's arm. And then you have another evil twin. And then
there's
you're, like,
conspiracy theories. And,
you're really selling me on making me try the trilogy.
I remember getting to the end of Metal Gear Solid 2, and I know everyone likes to look at the series as just Metal Gear Solid 3 because 3 was awesome. And it is awesome, and you can totally play it if you're completely new to the series. But if you played Metal Gear Solid 2, those last 20 minutes of gameplay just really mess with your head. Like, I think I've played the game 6 times, and I still don't understand what the hell happened.
And that's one of the things. It's like, it's a very delicate balance to kind of keep these narratives going and make it in such a way that it's compelling to a person, but without actually, because you do want to kind of spread out the brand, but you also want to make sure it's consistent in the meantime. And I think, you know, Square does that with Kingdom Hearts, where they're like, okay, we've done 1 and 2. We'll do a bunch of ones. We'll do a bunch of spin-offs on the handhelds because they don't want to put a main game on the handhelds.
Yeah.
And the problem is they haven't made a Kingdom Hearts 3. So in this whole time, it's just kind of like waiting around for them to find a way to get Kingdom Hearts 3 up and running.
Yeah.
Another franchise that kind of does that. Well, we won't touch on Zelda just yet, because I think Zelda is a different beast altogether.
It is, yeah.
But I think Metroid is another franchise that does that, where people aren't as keen to point it out, because Metroid didn't really become story-focused or story-driven until, like, Prime. But if I'm remembering correctly, it is the actual order of the game is Metroid, Metroid 2...
Wait, there's an order to that game?
There's an order to the Metroid franchise.
But they're like... But there are like 50 of those games,
there's not that many Metroid titles.
Oh, okay, well, there's quite a lot.
I would say there's probably the same number of Kingdom Hearts titles. But
there's,
yeah,
there's a lot more Zelda titles. I have Hyrule Historia, and I still can't. I don't understand the timeline there either.
Yeah, we'll get to Zelda in a bit.
I've stared at the thing like 8 times, and I'm thinking to myself, I swear to God, these people just made games however they thought they made games, and just threw it into the timeline.
I think that's key of Zelda, that's key of Metroid, and that's key of Metal Gear to an extent, because these were games that were just kind of made, and then they kind of became more popular and more story driven in the PlayStation, Nintendo 64 era. And it's like, okay, we have to kind of put these things, we have to start connecting them. But yeah, because with Metroid, it's Metroid 2. It's Metroid Prime 1, 2, and 3. It's Super Metroid. It's Metroid Other M. It's Metroid Fusion.
I love Metroid Fusion.
Yeah, but it's like one of those things. And this, you know, this is, and we've had this discussion about movie prequels before, and Trent wrote up something about it this week about prequels, is that the problem with prequels at times, that's not necessarily the quality of them, is that you're kind of shoestring into, you know where the story ends. So you're kind of like, you can only take so much creative liberty before you have to push the story in that direction. This isn't related to video games, but I think a very big example of that, and one that I really hate for it, is Wolverine Origins.
Because
they literally didn't find a way to write themselves out of it, so they came up with a magic bullet.
Yeah, well, that happens often, though. MacGuffins? People try and write their way out of problems all the time in film. It's like
video games. I've seen Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2. That is a film full of MacGuffins. Or Deus Ex Machina's. I mean, it's like every problem that comes up, oh yeah, we forgot to tell you about this, but a year and a half.
Have you been keeping up with the Clone Wars cartoon?
Yes, I have.
Oh my God. Do you remember that season, I think it was like season 3 or season 4, where they went to that like Force planet or whatever, and they wipe the minds of everybody. Because,
mm-hmm.
Like, they show that Anakin, you gotta become Darth Vader, but it's just like, oh my God, he's dying, so we have to erase his memory, pretend none of it happened. It's just like, what the
f-? Yep.
That kind of pissed me off. Like, what seriously pissed me off?
And it's kind of the same thing with video games. I mean, I don't think we've had any radical rewriting of a retconning of history in video games yet. I could be mistaken. Well, that's not necessarily true.
I can think of one example.
What example is that?
With Halo, because like the series is driven by the games. I'm not sure if this counts, but they had to rewrite the books to fit the canon of the games. So like,
they still don't.
I mean, the first Halo book about Master Chief and Reach, they had to rewrite that because Reach, the game, changed a whole lot of stuff that happened.
Yeah, I thought you were going to mention Reach, because Reach is another one that, at the end of the day, you kind of know that you're fighting for nothing because the team can't survive.
Right, and they kind of wrote themselves into a hole with the Spartan Threes.
Yeah, that's something I was trying to hit on in my article the other day about the foregone conclusion. The biggest problem with writing a prequel for any piece of medium is that there's already an understanding of how things are going to end. So, like in X-Men Origins Wolverine, like we see Sabretooth, we see Wolverine, we see all these characters. They put them in action situations and try and raise the stakes, but we know that they survive because we see them in the movies afterwards. You know? We know that Wolverine's going to get his memories wiped. We know that he's going to get an adamantium skeleton. These are foregone conclusions. The same thing happens in any prequel for any franchise.
Yeah, and with video games, it becomes a lot harder, especially when... going back to God of War, I think this is a big problem with God of War, because over the course of the franchise, Kratos becomes this overpowered person. He becomes a god, literally.
Right.
And you have to find a way, and you kind of want those things in the games, but you when you go back to prequels, he can't have all those powers because he didn't have it before the start of the first game.
Yep.
So, like...
And the weird thing is like, with his characterization, in each prequel... From what I've understood, they've tried to build him up as like the super sympathetic guy, but then in the sequels following, that doesn't happen. Like he just rips off people's heads and just he'll just like destroy. He just destroys the entire planet. So it's hard to just. So it's really like it's a huge
just juxtaposition and disconnect from what he actually does later in the series.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things where, like, you know, like, you want to, like, and I've mentioned this before as far as God of War goes, like, one of my least favorite things about God of War is I find Kratos to be a completely unsympathetic character, and that was something that was evident from the first game, and even in the second game, but they want to go back, and they want to, and it's like, you know, you can't really do that, because then it's like, what explains his actions in 1 and 2, and...
They don't entirely fly in 3.
Yep.
Yeah. And going back to the Star Wars reference, it's kind of the same thing with Anakin, because you know eventually he has to turn to the dark side. So how do you do that and make him a likable character in the first 3 movies? Their solution was not to make him a likable character in the first 3 movies, but it wasn't.
I think they tried.
I don't think they tried to do that. I think that just happened by like force of by just hating Christensen and Jake Lloyd.
I'm saying they tried to do it, but it doesn't come off that way. If anything, he comes off as more whiny and bratty, and you end up wondering how does this guy become the most bad guy in the universe?
I think I end up wondering how these actors got jobs.
Yeah. Well, poor Ewan McGregor. As a pro tip, do not go see Jack the Giant Slayer, because him aside, that movie is just really awful.
I already saw it.
Yeah, it's not good, is it?
It's not. I mean, I can't hate it because it was directed by one of my favorite directors, but I can't.
Oh yeah, that reminds me. How's Days of Future Past going to go with that movie in mind, huh?
It doesn't look so good. But here's the thing. Okay, when we're talking about Bryan Singer made the good X-Men movies. He understands characterization. He understands the plight of being segregated because he's a gay director. He gets it. I think the X-Men franchise is in good hands with him. I think his problem with Jack and the Giant Slayer specifically is the fact that I don't think he understands completely 3D environments. Like, he's good at getting his actors to emote, but it's hard to make a CGI giant emote, you know? Like,
all right. Okay, I'll give you that. I'm sorry to go off on this tangent.
Yeah, but yeah, sorry, you're right. It sucks.
Sorry. I just want to get that out of my system.
I think it's a fair discussion, because I do think that, you know, in order to understand why overarching plots don't work and prequels and stuff like that, you do have to see how other movies, you know, like how other mediums do it. And it's not just a thing that's inherently bad, inherently flawed with video games. It is something that's really hard to do, because part of any story, any medium, I think, is trying to surprise and entertain your audience. And you can't really do that when it's kind of like hanging over your head. It's like, oh, we kind of know where this has to go.
It's like,
you can make it entertaining to a point. Like for instance, Titanic had a foregone conclusion. We know in the first couple of minutes that this boat is going to sink. But
you don't even have to. You could know that before the movie starts.
Yeah, you could know that before the movie starts. That's right.
You just look at the trailer.
Yeah.
Well, you can know history too.
You want to be boring.
You want to be boring about it.
But that's the thing. Like, you go to the movie because you want to see those action scenes. But you're right. The big climax of Titanic is the crash, and I don't think the movie would have been as good had James Cameron been a lesser director and didn't make such a big deal out of the crash. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, kind of going back to movies and stuff like that, I think this is comic books. Movies are also kind of guilty of this, because a lot of people tend to hate origin films because you kind of have an idea of where that's going. This person has a struggle. This person, you know, overcomes it. They become a superhero. But you can see it can be done well. Batman Begins does it fantastically. I would say Spider-Man 1 does it good.
I'd say Amazing Spider-Man does it good.
I was going to say Amazing Spider-Man doesn't do it so well because it's kind of retreading stuff that we saw like a decade ago in Spider-Man.
That's not its fault, though.
It really isn't its fault. Like,
it's not its fault.
That movie was going
to
be knocked
out. You're right. There's less impact to what Amazing Spider-Man is doing because we have seen it before, but that's not... That really is attributed to it being an origin story.
it was making the most of what it had.
Yeah, and
I'm not going to beat on the film for that when I can beat on it for using Ding. Or a bad guy who looked like Lord Voldemort.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, kind of going back to video games, it's kind of the same thing in that we know that our characters have to go on this certain journey, and it has to be interactive. So you know that for the most part, and I think Metroid is guilty of this, and God of War is guilty of this as well, is that in order to kind of have that journey in every game, they have to depower their heroes at the start of the game. So with Metroid, she ends up using her abilities somehow, usually in some really contrived manner. God of War 2, for instance, and this turned me off to the game at the start. In order for Kratos to use his power, Zeus tricks him into putting all of his godly powers into a sword. How in the world would that not have turned out bad for him?
But the fact that that effort is made in the first place is important, because look at direct sequels and RPGs, for instance. You know, by the time you finish one RPG, let's say hypothetically Final Fantasy X. All your characters are maxed out in level. They can kill pretty much anything with one hit. And then you get into Final Fantasy X-2, and, like, Yuna's level 1, all the items and crap that was powerful from the last game no one has anymore. You know? It's one of these things. Like, in a lot of circumstances, at the start of the game, the characters just kind of suck. And I actually appreciate when the games put an effort in to explain why they suck now.
Yeah, because like you said, I mean, some games, some games do start you off on the same power that you had at the previous ones. But yeah, at the same time, it's like, yeah, I just kind of went through Final Fantasy X. Why is she kind of weak now? Why is like these monsters that she would have stomped or not even paid attention to? Because at the end of RPGs, you know, you're so overpowered that the level one creatures shouldn't really blink at you. But now she's, like, getting beaten by them, and it's like, where's her magical powers? Did she get rusty? Did she stop training?
Yep.
And it's like, you know, we're not going to make any effort. The only one I could think of that I've done this with is Tales of Symphonia and Tales of Symphonia Dawn of the New World. But they are a bit smarter about that because it's a direct sequel, but most of the characters from the previous games are just kind of characters that hop in and out of your parties at random story juncture because they are so powerful. And that's the way around it. I mean, granted, I also hate Dawn of the New World because it has a very poor monster aspect. Different subject for a different day.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that sequel, personally.
Yeah, and that actually brings me to another problem with some of these long-form narratives is sometimes you're kind of forced, you know, like you have to bring back these returning characters, and it doesn't always work. Like, for the first couple of hours, maybe first 20 hours, I don't even know when it turned. But, like, the main character from Tales of Symphonia is seen as the villain in this game. Like, you know it's not going to happen, but they want to bring him into the game. You can't have him as a focal point because they don't want you to control him. But they need a way to have him be in it early on. So it's like this really contrived story about him being evil or something. And you know it's not going to happen. It's just a misunderstanding. But they continue pushing it for like 20 hours.
Yeah.
It kind of goes with, and we haven't mentioned this, and I don't necessarily think it has a long-form story, but Uncharted 3, because they have to bring back like, all the characters from Uncharted 1 and 2, and some of it's just like...
Like, what was it with Chloe? Doesn't she like duck out... Like, really early on in the game?
Yeah, I think he's like, he's going to take a bus. He's like, I'm not going to go with you. Have a good day or something like that. The other thing was with... What's the other girl's name?
Elena.
Like, when Drake washes up on shore and she somehow magically finds him in all of the beaches.
Perfect timing.
Oh, Drake, I just happened to be walking by. So you wash up on shore.
What are you doing here? I'm just in the neighborhood and shit. Doing my thing.
Enjoying the sun.
Yeah. You know, what you doing here? Oh, that's cool. Hey, mind if I join you for a few hours?
Yeah, so, you know, it's some of these contrivements. And then some of the times it's just like you don't want these characters to come back. They can do anyhow. Infamous has Zeke, I think his name is.
Well, that I kind of understood because he was such a huge part of Cole's life. And he really is the only person who Cole had in Empire City after everything went down.
Yeah,
so that made sense.
I mean, it makes sense, but I mean, from like a feedback standpoint, I remember a lot of people saying he was like the worst part of the first game.
Yeah, and then I felt like they made up for that in the second game by making him like the heart of the team and working through his problems with Cole.
Okay, I haven't played the second one yet. It's on my PSR drive. There, I should get around to that.
There is a mission in Infamous 2, which just sort of like is basically just Cole and Zeke dicking around, more or less. And I feel like it really shows what their friendship was all about before Cole got powers.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess you could have that redemption arc.
Right.
Yeah. So we kind of, I mean, we're jumping all over the place, but, you know, it is, you know, like, that's kind of the main things that we get from these, is that there tend to be two ways to continue a story if you don't want to continue a story. The first is to go back to the beginning, and it'll go back to a previous event. We've seen that with Halo, we've seen that with God of War, we've seen that with Gears of War. We've seen that with a lot of franchises. The yeah. other way, and it's a bit more confusing because these are really hard to do, like guidance or side stories. And we've seen this with Halo, we've seen this with Kingdom Hearts, we've seen this with Metroid, we've seen this with Zelda, where you kind of do these stories that take place in between certain games.
Intervals.
Yeah. Or, like, you see, even in, like, Halo 3 ODST, like, it's not a, because it's supposed to take place at the same time as Halo 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something I wasn't too keen on.
I didn't like ODST a great amount, but that wasn't exactly why.
I like ODST. It has my second favorite campaign in the franchise.
I like it more for its presentation than I do the story.
Yeah,
but
that's the thing though. Like, I play all these games for their story, and when you see like the main, like in my mind, Halo was supposed to be a trilogy, and in my mind, Gears of War was supposed to be a trilogy, and Mass Effect was supposed to be a trilogy, and
Mass Effect is a trilogy.
All these major series that they're
more
now like pumping out sequels for.
that was kind of the reason I wanted to do this show is because. We did get promised a lot of franchises that were going to be three games and done, but what happens, and this happens with a lot of franchises, is that they become successful, you want to continue it, but you do end the story, which is why I don't have that excitement for Gears of War Judgment. Well, you know, love it or hate it, the story's complete, their mission's done.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me about Gears of War Judgment. It's like, after they do that and they move on to a sequel, where do they go from there?
And
Gears of War 3 really does have like a really does end the trilogy in a way so that there is no way that there can be another Locust unless like they go out.
They could do what Halo 4 did and introduce a new threat, right?
Okay, well that'd be stupid.
Yeah, but even then Halo still had the same Halo threats, but with a different part.
Halo pretty much like had that built in from day one. As flimsy of an excuse that may sound, like Halo and Mass Effect have that built in from day one. The Gears of War does not.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing with Gears of War is, like, it's not, it could be done if it's, like, a threat stick. They could advance the story forward and kind of, like, maybe jump ahead, like, 50 years to see how the humans are dealing with their kids now. But that's not what they did. They went back, and it's not even, like, going back to the history of the main characters. It's going back to the history of side characters.
Well, I would call Barrett and Cole the main characters, but I feel like what's going on with them is something that could fit more in the books.
I mean, if they can make it, I'm not going to talk down what they're doing. If they're going to make a game out of that story, that's fine. The only thing that bugs me is I feel like we get wrapped into these stories, and it does feel like there's a beginning and a middle and an end, and from there it just feels like someone's milking it. And the charm is lost. Like, I don't care as much about Halo ODST or Halo Reach, and I haven't even really played through Halo 4 or even Halo Wars, for that matter, because I wanted the trilogy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's one of those things where we got our story, we got what we asked for. We didn't want any more. Like, if you're going to continue this, this is a fault of any industry, really, is that once you find a successful franchise, they aren't easy to come by. You don't want to give it up, even when you complete the story, even when you want to finish the narrative. Like, we've seen recently, true or false, you know, rumors of Christian Bale returning for the role of Batman in a Justice League film or something like that. They had a perfectly fine arc for him in the three Dark Knight movies.
I'm not happy about that for multiple reasons.
Hey, we didn't like the movies because of Christian Bale.
No,
we liked the movies because of Christopher Nolan.
No, it's not that. It's not that. I'm totally cool.
I hate the movie to the Christian Bale.
Yeah, like Christian Bale's a good actor. I just don't think that he and his Batman have any place in what DC is trying to do.
I mean, this isn't a discussion to have on this show.
It's hard though, because you have to take a step back. Like, if we look at what's been released so far, we have a very dark, gritty, and realistic trilogy of Batman movies, which everyone can pretty much agree is awesome. And then we have this new Superman movie. Yeah.
That's debatable, but sorry, anyway.
I like the third film.
I do too. I like again, not the place for this discussion.
I like it a lot. Then we have this new kind of dark and gritty version of Superman that looms on the horizon that I'm actually really excited for. And to be frank, until I saw the teaser trailer, I wasn't excited at all for it, you know? And then we have Green Lantern. And I really love Green Lantern the property. I really do.
but that movie was awful.
Oh my god. I mean, it's not, and I know everyone complains about Ryan Reynolds because he's a cocky bastard, but realistically speaking, the original Hal Jordan was a cocky bastard. I don't have a problem with that. I just think the movie blows. You know, the movie itself blows. So if they're trying to do the Marvel Avengers approach and just have a whole bunch of individual properties that are really good that come together to form a major property, I don't know if they can get away with it with DC, because not only do we have some movies that are great and some that aren't, but the tones of them are so different. Like, the tone of the recent Dark Knight saga is very dark and realistic and gritty, and that's what Superman looks to be. Same can't be said about Green Lantern. I don't know who else they're going to throw in, if they're going to attempt a Flash movie or what have you, but...
Justin Long.
but yes, we will have our Dreamcast in Justice League podcast at a later date. Again, like I said, I'm a fan of ODST. I can't think of other games. I mean, I guess if you want to get technical, Majora's Mask is technically a side story.
No, it's a full story.
It's a full story. But it takes place in between. It kind of takes place in between Ocarina of Time.
All right, let me go get my Hyrule Historia.
there's a timeline for it, but I believe officially, like, I think Majora's Mask working title was like Legend of Zelda, Gaiden or something like that, and doesn't take place in between Ocarina of Time, but it takes place after Young Link is sent back into the past or whatever. So it's a weird story. It's a weird Zelda games again are just really weird. According to Nintendo, Metroid Prime are all kind of side stories. They don't exist in the official timeline.
Alright, I have the timeline. Alright, looked this up online. But it starts with the creation of the land, and I think if you've played any Zelda game, you understand the whole three goddesses thing, right? Then there's Skyward Sword. So the most recent Zelda is actually the first game. Then there's Minish Cap, Four Swords, Ocarina of Time. And then from Ocarina of Time, it actually splits into two. Well, three, technically. Three different timelines. So one of those timelines is where the hero is triumphant and he goes back to becoming a child. And then the sequel to that timeline is Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
But that's the results of one of the outcomes of Ocarina of Time.
I guess we might as well talk about this now. The Zelda franchise has the worst kept storyline in any medium I can think of. Not because of any, you know, like we said at the start of the show, Nintendo didn't care, you can see, Nintendo didn't care about the order of the game really until Ocarina of Time. And that's when they started to try to fit because once Ocarina of Time comes in, everything's pretty much straightforward. As straightforward as you can be.
There is one thing that I would argue for, and if you played Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link, for instance, it's been said for like 20 years now that is the last game in the Zelda timeline. Even before there was an established timeline or even a hypothetical timeline, people were calling it the last game because it ends with the resurrection of Ganon being prevented forever. essentially. There's no way this guy can come back.
Yeah, so, but I always thought that, isn't Link to the Past after those games?
A Link to the Past?
Yeah.
No.
I always thought Link to the Past is the ultimate final game. But yeah, it's one of those things that it's just, yeah, because I believe the original concept of The Legend of Zelda, and I think Zelda 2, 1 and 2 deal with this, is that there's an actual Zelda who's asleep in the entire course of Zelda 2. And that's the actual Legend of Zelda. Since then, it's involved time travel and turning into wolves and all this other stuff. And any one Zelda game, I'm perfectly fine with the story in it. And any direct sequel tends to work. Wind Waker, Phantom Hourglass works. Link to the Past, Link's Awakening works. Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask works. It's once you try to connect them, and it's because it uses the worst concept in, I think, storytelling, which is time travel and alternate realities.
Yeah.
And it uses both of them. It's not one or the other. It uses both of them.
At the same time, yeah. Because it really is, Ocarina of Time happens. If the hero is defeated, the next game in line is A Link to the Past. If the hero is triumphant and goes to the Child Era, the next game in line is Majora's Mask. And if the hero is triumphant and remains an adult, the next game in line is technically The Wind Waker.
Yes.
So it is all over the place.
Yes, it is all over the place, because if I'm not mistaken, and I don't know if the time I go into specifically, that Wind Waker and Twilight Princess would take place at the same exact time, about 100 years after Ocarina of Time, in the timeline. So they're basically parallel games, just different takes on what happened at the end of Ocarina of Time. And just to make it more confusing, because the most recent game in the franchise is technically one of the earliest games in the franchise.
Yeah, the Adventure of Link, yeah.
Well, I was going to say Skyward Sword's the most...
Oh, yeah, that, yeah.
It's the earliest game. I think Minish Cap is before it.
But I think I like Skyward Sword because they actually approach it like it is the foundation of the series. Like, they take a lot of the tropes that appear throughout the series and really fully implement them in the game. And they also establish that, you know, the land of the sky, the place where everything is happening within Skyward Sword, will eventually become, Hyrule.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying before, is that since Ocarina of Time, they've been really concise with the storyline, as much as they can be. But yeah, like Wind Waker starts off, you know, Wind Waker starts off by recapping the events of Ocarina of Time and what happened since then. Twilight Princess goes through what happens in Ocarina of Time and what happened since then. Phantom Hourglass is a direct sequel to the end of Wind Waker and stuff like that. So they've been pretty good with that. What happened, though, is before Ocarina of Time, there's like four games that you have to fit in. And then there's the handheld titles, which sometimes aren't even made by Nintendo. Like, where are the Seasons games?
Well, thankfully, they didn't include Link's Crossbow Training, so...
Well, Link's Crossbow Training is easy. It's a sequel to Twilight Princess. But, yeah, stuff like that gets confused. And this is why I wanted to, you know, this is why Zelda's its own beast. Like, it's, you know, more so than any other game. The reason Zelda isn't a continuous storyline, it's a world. It's its own little universe, because it's not like a straight line. It's not like this happened and this happened. It's like this happened, then 100 years after that happened, this happened. Then if this happened, this happened 100 years from here, but this happened 50 years from there. And that's just a beast that you don't want to touch in any medium.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And I also say this is why I don't try to figure out the Zelda timeline. It's not worth it. Nintendo, as much as they want to say that they have an official timeline in the release in Hyrule Historia, it was something they probably came up with, like 5 minutes to appease the fans. I think Game Choice put together like a 30-minute video trying to explain it all.
I would like that more. That's what Dead Space 2 and 3 did. I think that's what Gears of War 3 did, too.
What, recap the story?
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Oh, here's what you've missed, because we don't know what we did either.
Yeah. Well,
my favorite is when they always try to explain it in-game. to people who don't know it, like, they did that with Mass Effect, with, what's his nuts, Vega? And he's just like, oh, well, I thought the Krogans hated the Turians. Like, the Turians, or for the Genophage, no, it's like, dude, the Turians hate them both, or the Krogan hate both people for the Genophage, but the Salarians made it, and the Krogan, Turians distributed it.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of makes sense if you're approaching a universe for the first time. Like, if it's like a, like for sci-fi films, like the reason why the first Star Wars, the original Star Wars, was such a great film and everyone was really easy to connect with it was because there was Luke. Like, Luke knew nothing about the Force. He knew nothing about Jedi. He knew nothing about the Empire. He was just some kid that lived on a desert, right? And he's our avatar in the film. We learn things as he learned things, and we understand the universe as he does. It gets a lot more sticky if you get into the next film, and it's like, so this is what's happened so far, because you didn't watch the first one.
Or Earl.
Yeah.
You know what show that we both watch that does that a little bit clunkily sometimes?
Doctor Who?
No, Young Justice. Because remember last week's episode where they were at the summit and the bad guys were just like summing up everything that the Reach did wrong? It's like, oh, well, your approval ratings are at an all-time low and you let the meta teams escape and also you lost the war world and now everybody knows that you're actually a bunch of liars.
Yeah, and the problem with that is kind of, that's, and a lot of TV shows are kind of guilty of that. It's the penultimate episode. We have to make sure everybody remembers what happens because technically, you know, like some of these shows would air over 8 or 9 months. So they don't do recaps, but it's like, we'll just drop you to remind us as to, hey,
no, I won't give Young Justice crap for that because like they got a bad hand, but that's not the point. That's not the point of this podcast.
Oh no, I'm not even saying that. Like even Avatar did that. They had that episode where like they went to like that play. That was
recapping
the show.
Oh, I love that episode. But the thing about that is that they did that in a very like sort of shorthand way, and they didn't. And they only spent like 30 minutes getting through the important stuff or the things that people are most likely to remember. They didn't just like try to go through like all 60 episodes beforehand.
To be fair, though, that happens on a fairly regular basis when it's like aimed at a younger demographic. Like, I love Batman the Animated Series, but there are times in the series where he's recapping things that happen to different villains, and I'm like, I already know this. But if you plunked 8-year-old Trent in front of the TV, he'd be like, I don't remember this episode. You know what I mean? I'm glad you're retelling me.
And I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know any game that uses recaps, and I think that's for the best. But,
I really dislike that Dead Space 2 did. I really dislike Dead Space 2 in general, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
I was going to say, I mean, it's not, you don't have to use it if you pay through the trilogy, but Mass Effect does it to a degree with the comic book.
Yeah, but they make that optional, and you,
yeah,
for anybody who wants to do it. I'd say someone who does it well, even though they do it every single game, is probably the Sly Cooper franchise.
Well, they needed it in this recent game.
Yeah, they did need it, but also like
Buccaneers, right?
Yeah, like in Sly 2 and 3, they recapped the hell out of those games.
Actually, I was gonna say that video game version of a recap is the boss rush, where you have to fight all the bosses from the game at one time.
Yeah,
because it's kind of like,
fair. That's fair.
You remember this guy and this? Like, the problem with boss rushes sometimes is that it's kind of the same boss. And the idea should be that at that point, the bosses should be so much easier for your character that you can just kind of run through them. Because the idea of a boss rush, at least to me in theory, should be like, this is the journey that your character has taken. Like, they've went from this puny guy to this guy who should demise something that he beat and never won. And that's not usually the case. Like, I remember Beautiful Joe doing that, and Beautiful Joe kicked my ass.
It's supposed to be a tough game.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, but then you do the boss rush, and it's like all the bosses are still tough as nails.
It looked like it would be an easy game.
Oh, no.
No.
It's hard.
Not even close.
It's hard, yeah.
Yeah, Beautiful Joe is not an easy game. The Saturday morning aesthetics may fool you, but it's not an easy franchise.
Yep.
Probably why it didn't find any success, because it's kind of a mashup between styles and actual depth.
I miss Clover Studios so much.
I mean, they're basically Platinum Games.
Kind of, I guess. Platinum and Grasshopper. I think that those are the two studios that they went off to.
So, yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, damn it.
We were talking about recapping.
Oh, we were talking about recapping. But I also wanted to bring up something before I forgot about it. And this is something, again, that movies are guilty of, but I always hate it. It's when you kind of realize that you're going to do a trilogy or you're going to do a sequel, and you don't know how to end the middle game. So you just kind of like, to be continued, because...
Halo 2.
Halo 2 ends on that. God of War 2 ends on that.
I'm like, oh yeah, we finally did it. I kicked so much ass this game. And
like,
then he's
nope.
Like, putting in space, and it's like, Master Chief will
finish the fight.
And I'm sitting here like, I'm ready to do it now, man. Like,
let's go.
Bring it on.
I'm so glad that you brought up God of War 3, because...
Well, God of War 2.
God of War 2, because, I think it was Zero Punctuation, when he reviewed it, he said that God of War 3 exists only because God of War 2 felt like it didn't have to end properly, and that is probably the most accurate thing that's ever been said about the God of War franchise.
Yeah, because God of War, because I just finished this last week or a week before that, and God of War 2 is, you climb up to something,
as God of War 3 begins. Like,
yeah.
They literally just swap out the cutscenes.
Yeah.
Just with HD graphics.
Yeah. And what happens here is, like, as a consumer, like, it's not bad now because God of War 3 exists. But if you think, like, this was a 2006, 2007.
Yeah.
And God of War 3 didn't come out until 2009. So.
God of War didn't come out until 2010. I would have been pissed off if I, like, spent however much it cost for God of War 3, or for God of War 2. And just straight up does not end.
Yeah.
For like another nearly half a decade.
Yeah. See, I found the same thing to be really annoying in books, for instance. Like, the books that I love to read are like the standalone complete stories. And I feel like a video game really should be a complete story.
I think any product should be a complete story. I think, and this is a problem with a lot of trilogies, especially defined ones, is that a film should have a beginning, middle, and end. But it should have elements that you can kind of connect over.
Like foreshadowing.
Yeah, kind of like, not to go back to this too much, but the Dark Knight trilogy. Batman Begins is a film that's self-contained. There's nothing that you need to see any other film for. You can see Batman Begins and be satisfied.
Yeah.
But it leaves you with an element that can carry over to a sequel.
Right. They don't they don't beat you over the head with it. It's just a simple mention. It's like, oh, hey, here's this guy with his playing card. He may be a problem sometime.
Yeah.
It'll be like, and he's just like, I'll look into it. That's literally all they do, and they don't touch on that.
And The Dark Knight ends with a somewhat to be continued, but it's not a to be continued that
makes
you
understand. It's like a definitive to be continued where you could ultimately feel satisfied at what happened.
Yeah. Because you get
that I was
because you get a conclusion.
I hate anyone who dislikes that film.
But yeah, you get a conclusion with the Two-Face and the Joker storyline. Some people were upset that Two-Face was kind of, you know, rushed in there at the end, but it probably would have been better than waiting until the next movie to deal with him.
I was really, really, and I know this is probably going to sound stupid in hindsight, but I was hoping, because I did feel like Two-Face was kind of rushed. His establishment as a villain and his implementation as a villain and his ending, I felt it all just kind of flew by. And I'm not saying it was poorly handled, but part of me did feel like it would have been cool if he had not died, and instead was at least there for a part of the third movie, you know? Outside of just being mentioned
like
in
he
conversation.
It kind of felt like he would have benefited from being in the third movie more.
I think it would have been more interesting to have him in the third movie. Especially if you kind of, you know, like the third movie dealt with Batman's emotional loneliness, and to have like the one person he could have considered a friend or somebody who would have been able to replace him become the main threat might have been more.
But I understand why they didn't, though. I think there's a golden rule of superhero movies that you can't have any more than two dedicated main villains.
Well, I mean, yeah, and that's
yeah. Spider-Man 2 proved that. Or
Spider-Man 3 proved that. You got, what, like, Harry flying around as the new Green Goblin, you have Venom, you have Sandman, I don't know what the hell is going on in the film.
Yeah.
Too much going on, and no one's getting any screen time.
Whatever the fuck that dance sequence was.
Oh, the emo. Oh,
emo Peter Parker, what are you doing to me?
Go away, Tobey Maguire. No, don't throw your life away. No, put the gun down.
But yeah, I think games need, you know, I'm trying to think of a middle chapter in a game that ends well.
I think Gears of War 2, for its credit, didn't end terribly.
I think it's, okay, it depends on what you mean. End in terribly, as far as the story, I don't think it did, but end in terribly it did, because that boss fight wasn't a boss fight.
No, that was just a glorified quick time event.
Yeah.
It could have been cut dead. Motherfucker! Sorry.
So yeah, I agree with you. But the other thing though, is Gears of War 3 doesn't pick up after Gears of War 2. Gears of War 3 is a time jump.
Yeah, but it's not a big one, though. It's not a big one. There's something that...
It's kind of, I don't know. I think it's kind of big. I remember thinking, like, why does Anya look so buff? What happened to Anya? Last time I checked, Anya was really skinny and tiny and hot. Now she looks like a man.
Okay, now I'll give you that. They do some...
That transformation takes time, Justin.
Be for yourself, dude. Steroids. Give me one of this. I got a fucking six-pack right now.
I was going to say, I don't know if they want to concern themselves with steroids while being invaded, but, you know, priorities. But yeah, I would even say that Mass Effect 2 kind of ends poorly, and I would say both ways, because that final boss fight with the Terminator is just really odd.
I feel like Mass Effect 2 sort of had that going in its favor, that it did end that way. Like, it also helped it, but it also hurt it.
I'm really glad that you referred to him as the Terminator, because that's exactly what that thing looked like.
I thought it was a Sentinel. Or like a love child of a Sentinel and a Terminator.
That's fair. Yeah. It's looking back now, I can look at Mass Effect 2 as a really good action RPG with a heavy action element. But I do not like Mass Effect 2. It is my least favorite of the games to play.
Really?
And I think that's because I liked the character customization and the armor customization and the gun customization in the first game so much. And then I got into the second game and I felt like everything was dumbed down for the first person shooter gamer. You know what I mean? That may just be me.
I was not a fan of some of the stuff that they did in Mass Effect 1 that I was glad that they cut for Mass Effect 2. But I did like in Mass Effect 1 the ability to like get better with your weapons. That is something that I wish that they'd stuck with for 2 and 3.
Yeah, but
I'll leave it at that.
Can you folks think of any trilogies that, I mean, like, again, trilogies are also kind of new, because a lot of games, I mean, you could, yeah, I can't think of a trilogy that's ended with a good middle chapter in gaming.
I think the problem is, like, we have a lot of franchises in video games, right?
Yeah.
There are very few of those franchises that aren't, like, in-name-only standalone titles. Like, you buy a Mario game, and it's not a sequel to a previous Mario game. I mean, hypothetically, it could be. But it's a standalone game, right? You buy a Zelda game, and it feels like a standalone game. You buy a Metroid game, and it feels like a standalone game. You buy a Call of Duty, and it feels like a standalone game. I mean, there's a lot of franchises that have a lot of entries running in them, but very few of them have directly, like, continuation. There's rarely a full continuity going throughout the games.
And again, that's kind of why we wanted to have this, is because, it's not something that we see often in the medium, because it is something that's hard to pull off. But we have been seeing it more and more, and what happens is, like, and, you know, this is why stuff like Mario works, stuff like Pokemon, even stuff like Zelda to a degree, is because they don't concern themselves with this. It's once you have a finite ending, once you say, like, we're going out to make 3 games, we're going to have an ending, a dramatic ending for our characters, you kind of write yourself into a corner because you have to pay off that. And then what happens with these sequels is that they end up being successful and they're like, we have to continue this franchise. But, you know, and we can spoil it. It's like Gears of War, they kill off one of their main characters.
Yeah.
Like, how do you go forward with that? It's a co-op game where one of your main characters is dead.
Especially when he really is as integral into the story as Dom was.
Yeah.
Like, Dom really was, like, the driving force of the story behind those 3 games, even more than Marcus. Marcus was really just more of a cipher, and Dom was, like, the guy that everybody latched onto.
Really? I don't know. Like, to me, none of the characters really mattered. I'm going to be really frank here. I feel like Bayard was one note. I felt like the Coltrane was one note. I felt like Marcus Fenix, to an extent, was also kind of one note. Like, if you look at the two mains, Dom and Marcus, Dom has lady issues and Marcus has daddy issues, and that's all nice, but that is one element of a character that has not been fully developed. We only get to see one side of these people because the game isn't about them. The game is about killing these locust things. They're on a campaign. We're supposed to be focused on the events of the campaign. So while Dom totally has an important arc with Maria, which leads to his death ultimately, and Marcus has a relatively important arc with his father and his trial and all that bold crap that's completely irrelevant by the third game. Ultimately, the games are driven not by the characters, but by the campaign that those characters are forced to experience, really. I mean, they don't move forward because it's like, we really need to go find Maria. No, they go to that location that Maria happens to be at because they're killing locust, you know? So I feel like all those characters in that series are superfluous because their hands are being forced. I don't feel like they would want to be there had they not been there and exposed to something that was trying to kill them.
Well, I think that, you know, this is kind of getting into the difference between good storytelling, good characterization, and just having, like, I agree with you. Emotionally, I don't connect with any characters in Gears of War. They don't seem to, you know, they try to force emotion in it, and it just doesn't come off well because it's that clashes with the style of the game, which is like big, gruff men chainsawing people to death, and you're supposed to have like these tender moments with them. Like, it doesn't work. Like, you don't
suck, bro.
I'm just thinking, the more you're talking about like these big, gruff men, as soon as you add emotions to the mix, suddenly it becomes like really violent gay porn. You know what I mean?
Like, well, I mean, there's just no other kind.
But yeah,
for being honest,
it just sounds weird because there's a reason why people like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone have interests are always kind of like secondary items to these action movies, and it's usually damsels in distress is because they need something to fight for, not necessarily something to get all emotional about. It's one of the reasons I don't like the original Expendables, because they spend so much time with the self-interest of Stallone, who is like half of his age, and it makes no sense when you have all these big bro-y men and one of them's like ultra sensitive.
See, I like the first Expendables because, to be frank, I expected it to be awful. I walked in there thinking, this is going to be the shittiest movie I've seen all year. And what I got was a whole bunch of mindless action and explosions, and I thought that was satisfying. But I didn't walk in there looking for characterization, whereas when I'm picking up a game and I'm investing 10 to 20 hours into each entry, I expect those characters and that narrative to be decent.
See, I don't necessarily need that. I think it depends on your priorities. Again, it depends on the gamer that you are. Like, I am fine with Mario because I have an emotional connection for Mario in part because, you know, it's a character.
Did you have a dream of being a plumber?
Yes, because I have a dream. But no, it's a character you grew up with. That's one way to have an emotional connection with the character. It's just something that's been part of your life. At the same time, like I said, I don't like the God of War franchise because I can't connect with Kratos. I don't have that much anger in my life. I've never had that much anger in my heart.
Yeah, to me, Kratos has always seemed just kind of like a jackass.
Yeah, so. Because everything that everything has happened to Kratos has been his own fault.
but that those are Greek tragedies, though. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but the problem is, like, with Greek tragedies, like Oedipus or something like that. It's like he falls into these by accident. Maybe it's hubris or whatever. Kratos goes out of his way to find more ways to screw himself over.
He really does.
Yeah.
It's like, God, there was one scene in God of War 3, the big guy, was it Hephaestus? Where Pandora is his daughter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so basically, like, Hephaestus betrays Kratos, and then...
Everybody else does.
Yeah, you know, because you can't... Because they figure that if they betray him, then they're going to live, which is always a smart move when you're dealing with that guy who's walked out of hell like who's walked out of hell like 10 times, like he fucking owns the joint.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
Yeah. Why not? No, but like there was that one scene like where you kill him and he's just sort of like begging for his life as he dies. And I feel like that was a really weird contrast when Kratos keeps on like intentionally protecting Hephaestus' daughter and acts like he didn't do that to his own daughter.
Yeah, it's a weird, like, you know, like I mentioned with the God of War 2 where like Zeus tricks him, and at the end of God of War 2, Gaia tricks him, Athena tricks him.
Ares tricks him.
Stop trusting people, you know?
Yeah, at some point you have to think, like, okay, you know what, I've been screwed over by 15 gods. I'm not going to trust the next one. And he continues to, like, he gets screwed over, and he gets angry about it. Like, you need to trust in these people. They aren't honest. Like, one person I get. Two people, maybe. Three's pushing
it. It's been, like 10 people who have tried to kill you in, like, 3 months, dude. You gotta let it go. You need to be friends.
I think the other thing with that is that he's also, he overacts. Like, there's one scene in particular, the boss in the God of War 2, I forget who it is, but, like, he slams a dude's head into the door, and he doesn't do it, like, once or twice. He does it, like, 10 times.
It was probably God of War 3 with, I think it was Hercules.
And I'm just like, why? And he's like, whatever.
His face needed smashing.
Why not? His face was begging for it, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, and, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, to contrast that, for example, and this is like, I always say that Mass Effect 2, I always think has great characterizations.
Oh, I think the characters are really, really strong, but I feel like, I like the game mechanics less. That's the only thing for me with Mass Effect 2. I love the characters a lot more than I did the first game.
Well, oh, yeah. My thing is, I think the characters are stronger, but I think the narrative is poor. Like, there's really no plot in Mass Effect 2.
Well, the plot's pretty straightforward. It's like this guy is brought back to life by this mysterious organization, chooses to screw over that mysterious organization, and then gives up hope that anyone's going to help him.
But that's kind of my point, though. It's like the plot is Shepard's resurrected. There's that attack on the other thing. They get their AA. They fight the Terminator. It's Mass Effect 3 time. That's pretty much the entire plot of Mass Effect 2.
Yeah, but you could kind of make that same excuse with Mass, or that same reasoning with Mass Effect 1 too, because.
But Mass Effect 1 had a conflict. It had a central villain. It had something that Shepard's.
I'll argue to that point, too. The strength of the narrative in Mass Effect 1 is, for about 70% of the time, Shepard was sure he was going after one guy. And it turned out that behind that one guy was this massive army that's always kind of been controlling things behind the scenes and has been responsible for countless deaths. And then it's like, okay, well, let's take a step back here. How are we going to kill this thing that's killed every civilization before us? So I feel like there's a strong narrative in the first Mass Effect. But I'll agree that the narrative is a lot weaker in the second one because it's the filler before the conclusion, you know?
Yeah. And this is, you know, this is why, you know, it's different when Mass Effect 3 was Mass Effect was contrived as a trilogy. And it's always, because, you know, like, with a trilogy, if you're going out and you know when it's going to be a trilogy, you should have something for every game or every story, but instead it seemed like Mass Effect was like, okay, we need to get from Mass Effect 1 to Mass Effect 3. What do we need in Mass Effect 2? And that's like, give them the bare minimum and just kind of move forward. I actually think it's probably stronger. Well, it also depends, because you can have it the other way. Like, I was going to say it's probably stronger if you come up with a trilogy after doing the first two games, but the problem with that is sometimes you end up where there's no way to resolve everything that you introduce.
Yeah,
because you didn't have the idea of connecting everything to begin with.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, we've talked about spiritual successors like Metroid and Mario, and we've talked about intended sequels, like with trilogies. But what about those unintended sequels that no one had prepared for, like the Final Fantasy 13 2s of the world, that just kind of happened because there was leftover material to work with, you know?
Night and the Returns, but we don't know the story of that. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, is there, you know, like, I'm okay with you revisiting the world, revisiting the story, if you have an interesting tale to tell, and not necessarily just because, like, crap, we need to make another Final Fantasy game. So let's just kind of use these characters. Because, yeah, like, Final Fantasy 13-2, from what I've seen, does it. It does away with the audited concepts of Final Fantasy XIII, like the core characters, and focuses on these other people. And it seems like it's a game that exists more mechanically to appease the people who had issues with Final Fantasy XIII than it is because Square Enix had this great story to tell.
Exactly. It was, in a lot of ways, that game in particular existed as an apology. Like, we're going to try the same thing, kind of, and we're going to try and correct all the mistakes that we made. And to that extent, I think they totally succeeded. I actually really like the mechanics in Final Fantasy XIII. I think 13-2. I think there's a lot of improvements that are made. However, because they're starting out with a new tangential narrative, they basically had to retcon the entire conclusion of Final Fantasy XIII. So you're thinking, like, you know, we had this complete story. We had a resolution with characters that we were happy about. And now that resolution is thrown out the window. Some characters are dead. Some characters might be dead. Like, things have changed in this universe. And the story ultimately ends up being kind of superfluous. So we have a game that uses leftover materials and makes relative improvements over existing game mechanics, but the narrative itself is a lot weaker, so it's kind of damaged the Final Fantasy XIII franchise or timeline or whatever you have.
Yeah, I mean, granted, at this point, a lot of stuff has damaged the Final Fantasy brand. Square mostly is at fault here. But, I'm trying to think of other franchises that kind of have, I guess another good example would be Metal Gear. Like, I don't think Metal Gear doesn't seem like it was intended to be a franchise that keeps on going.
Kind of, maybe. I mean, like, Metal Gear existed, and then there was Solid Snake 2. There was multiple Metal Gear games before Metal Gear Solid, right? And then you have Metal Gear Solid, and everyone thinks it's this amazing standalone game because it was released right at the end of the PlayStation's life, so the people who developed it had a really solid understanding of what the system was capable of and really used it to its potential. And then you get into Metal Gear Solid 2, which has all the same great game mechanics and the gameplay that people love, and the story makes just a lot less sense.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, like, you know, like, people always talk about, and we had this discussion, so I had this thought, people always kind of talk about how great the story is, but Metal Gear story is great in the fact that it's kind of batshit insane.
It is batshit insane, absolutely. What I will say is that I like Metal Gear Solid 4, and I think any fan of the series, any person who really knows a lot about the series, will appreciate Metal Gear Solid 4, not for the fact that its narrative alone is really good, but because it's kind of poetic in how it lines up with previous entries in the series. It takes elements of Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, and 3 and really kind of fleshes them out and pays homage to them, and I think any fan will really enjoy the game. But I think to anyone else to pick it up, like someone who doesn't understand the core concepts of the series, they're just going to think that the person who made this game is batshit crazy.
Which he like probably nothing. Is.
The characters are nuts. Like,
have
there
you
are sequences,
seen?
The Sunny sequences, for instance. Like, we know why Sunny continues to make eggs while humming that particular tune if you play the games. But to anyone else who's playing the game, you're watching this like, oh my god, this
you
is how
sound,
I'm going to die.
You sound really fucking
stroke.
Insane right now.
Yeah.
I have no clue what the fuck you're on about.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen how they're advertising the Phantom Pain? There's no doubt in my mind that Kojima was on that Japanese magic mushroom.
Yeah, what
that
the
Nintendo
hell is
sells.
That? Isn't it, aren't they like having the guy who was in the trailer with like the bandage face being interviewed by
yes,
real life game journalists? What is
he's
that?
He's being interviewed right now, and he's not even trying to talk about the game. They're interviewing him, asking him questions about the game, and he refuses to talk about it.
What is that? What is that about? Like.
What is
there just some sort of Japanese drug that I don't know about that I need to get my hands on?
Like I said, it's that Nintendo Magic Mushroom. It's the same stuff they use.
Apparently, because everything about the Phantom Pain, just from what I've heard, just sounds really fucking nuts.
Exactly, and that's why it works for them. It's why Metal Gear is such a huge franchise, is because they don't care. They haven't cared in some time.
Yeah, it'll sell. If they put the Metal Gear Solid name on it, it'll sell regardless of how batshit crazy it is.
So why didn't Revengeance sell anything?
Oh,
Because was, different gameplay, first of all.
I think Revengeance wasn't necessary. I think it's so because the Metal Gear franchise fan base don't want an action game. You know, and this is something we can have a discussion for another day. Maybe I'll push it down the line. Is that I think, you know,
also, that's a narrative that makes no fucking sense either.
Really?
Yeah.
That was one of the first things I heard out of fans complaining about how it doesn't make sense based
like,
on...
Like, I, again, I'm a fan of the series, and I get the series after repeatedly reading the in-game encyclopedias. Not that I think someone needs to sit Kojima down and explain how you're supposed to carefully weave exposition into the plot and not throw a fucking dictionary at someone. But that said, the game just doesn't make any sense. I mean, we had this whiny boy character in 2 who returned in 4 as a complete badass, and now he's just kind of an attitudinal freak. And what he does isn't making any sense, and I thought this was technically supposed to be a game that took place between 3 and 4, but it takes place after 4, so I don't understand who all these random characters are with all these random weapons, and they're all fighting each other, and it just seems... Like, I get it from the extent that it was developed by Platinum Games. I get it, because they always think stuff. But if a fan of the Metal Gear series can't even understand what's happening in the game, there's a problem.
Well, I mean, there is a problem. What can you do? What can you do?
Apparently not that.
Apparently not buy it, I guess.
Well, yeah. You'll feel. Too soon. But yeah, I think, you know, like I was saying before, I think that's something we should probably look at doing later on, is that I think, you know, a lot of times with franchises, and, you know, this goes with story, this goes with gameplay, this goes with reviews, a lot of times people forget that franchises come with a lot of baggage, and even though it might be Metal Gear in name, like, it's automatically kind of shut off a portion of the audience, because there are people who just don't like Metal Gear games, no matter what it is. And then there's another portion of the audience who expects certain stuff from Metal Gear. Like, Rising isn't something that's really stealth-focused. And a lot of people expect that from their game, and they kind of expect 2-hour cutscenes.
I suppose a good example of a game that's kind of like Rising in that respect is Star Fox Adventures for the GameCube. I mean, people bought it because it was Star Fox. And a lot of people like it because its gameplay is kind of Zelda-esque, I guess. But yeah, a lot of people hate it because it's not Star Fox, you know?
Not in the traditional sense.
No.
Right? So it's like Dragon Age 2 where some people like it, but a lot more people hate it because of the changes.
Yeah, the other thing is...
I hate Dragon Age 2. I will always hate Dragon Age 2.
I'm going through the Dragon Age series right now, so I have nothing.
But it's only 2 games, so it's not much of a series. But
whatever.
Soon to be 3. I'm going to be sitting down with BioWare at PAX East next week, so I'm gonna be airing some complaints.
Don't be that guy.
I was going to say the other thing is, especially with that game, in regards to that game, is that it was a new IP with a different game that Nintendo decided to throw the Star Fox license on top of.
Yeah, Dinosaur Planet.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that kind of turned people off, because it didn't need to be a...
Thank you, Justin.
Sorry.
Yeah, it didn't need to be a game about... it didn't need to be a Star Fox game. So that, you know, again, who's part of your audience. It's the same way that some people have issues with Kirby's Epic Yarn, because it was originally a game about Prince Chef or whatever his name is.
I love Kirby's Epic Yarn. but yes, I understand those. I actually don't understand those people, to be honest.
I don't
get it at all, because like, the game is still Kirby. I mean, it still plays like a Kirby game to an extent, right? And no one knew about this Prince character before that game was being developed. So it's not as if it was an existing IP that was replaced by Kirby because they didn't think it would sell units on its own. You know?
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, that's something we'll get into another time.
We should make another show out of it, because people say the same thing about Silent Hill 4, The Room.
Well, I will write that down in my notes. Is there anything that you folks want to talk about before we begin this episode?
What do you think is the biggest or most obvious case of we didn't know that we were going to get a sequel?
Wow, that's a tough one. I mean, I think this is an odd stretch because it's so disconnected, but I also think that's why it works. I would go with Red Dead Redemption because a lot of people say
Red Dead Revolver. Yeah.
I didn't even know that Red Dead Revolver was a thing.
It was an okay game, but it wasn't great. So
yeah, which is kind of my point, because nobody, you would ask people, Red Dead Redemption might as well be a new IP, but it is a sequel, in essence. It's just not a game that anybody's played.
Yep. One game that I suppose would be we didn't realize that we were going to get a sequel out of this, was Bioshock 2, because, I love the original.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wanted a sequel out of that thing.
I love Bioshock. It's one of my favorite all-time games, and I love System Shock too. So I love that. I love the fact that Bioshock takes so many elements from it, and I think it was a complete story. And I remember walking away from the first game thinking I'm really satisfied with what happened to my character and every single character I met. And then when I heard that Bioshock 2 was coming out and it was taking place 5 years or 10 years after the events of Bioshock, I was just like, how? What is left in the city? And it turns out there's nothing left in the city. Nothing but disappointment.
There's multiplayer and more water.
I was going to say, it also seemed that it didn't really bother Irrational because they're just ignoring it if it existed.
They just pretend like it wasn't even a thing, from what I hear.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the next Bioshock, though.
Yeah. What about you, Justin?
Crackdown 2.
Oh, Crackdown 2. Yeah, that's
probably...
As much as I like that game, they legitimately had no idea they were going to get a sequel, which is why they opened up that studio. And even... And another one is probably... what was the name of the fourth Red Faction game?
Armageddon?
Yeah, that. I don't think that they were probably expecting that to be too popular.
Yeah, I really loved Guerrilla, and I think the reason...
I did not like Armageddon.
Like the one after Armageddon is because it wasn't the same. You know, you went from this wide-open place that was kind of like GTA-like, you know what I mean? To being, closed-off corridors.
Right.
And I didn't like, there were still distractible environments, but you're still walking down a linear space, so that's the only thing I didn't really dig.
Just wasn't the same.
Yeah.
Then the last one probably be the Dark... Even though I love this franchise, it's probably the Darksiders.
I think I'm going to say the Darkness.
No. Well, that too, probably. But with Darksiders 2, they did an interquel, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, I like the story in both games somewhat, but the story in Darksiders 2 is a bit of a mess when you compare it to 1, which wasn't much to write home about either.
I loved playing the first Darksiders because it felt like a really high-death and gritty Zelda, you know? And I didn't really pay much attention to the story. I just really enjoyed the action and the puzzles. And then when I got Darksiders 2, I liked Darksiders 2, but it felt more like Prince of Persia, I guess? So the gameplay just didn't really hook me in, and I still wasn't really paying attention to the story, so I just kind of walked away feeling meh.
Okay. I guess for the final question is, we've kind of talked about them, we've danced around about it, but ultimately, what would you say is the video game franchise that has done the best job with a long-form narrative?
Are we talking strictly across video games?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that question's hard because, some of my favorite franchises, it's like every entry in that franchise has its own universe. Like, I love Final Fantasy, I love Grandia, I love Zelda, but everything is kind of self-contained. So there's no overarching narrative. Like, there's spiritual...
Well, Zelda has one, but...
Well hypothetically. there's elements that kind of come to pass in each one that's similar, but there's no overarching narrative. Like, it's not like every entry is a bigger piece of the puzzle, you know? So if we're looking at that alone... This is hard. Mass Effect, I guess. I like Mass Effect. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to go to Mass Effect. even with some of the story problems, they do it pretty well.
I am going to cheat because this is not very much of a long. Somebody has static, but this isn't much of a long form narrative. But it does have kind of the, I guess, best video game story, and that's going to be Uncharted, because that kind of the Drake and Elena relationship between the three games is kind of that connected element.
Okay.
And each game is pretty much self-contained. And it does a good, like, you know, there's no real cliffhanger ending. Two ends well. Like it does, like I said, it doesn't have a proper trilogy format. Like there's no like, yeah, you know, they give you. It's kind of like Indiana Jones.
Good thing,
each
game really. Sort of, each game just it is like ends. Indiana Jones. It's like every single one of the adventures is like a 50s action serial. You know.
Well, I mean, kind of like rid of Avengers in the first one. He turns at the end, and that's when he hooks up with. There's a new Avengers in the second one. The third one starts with a flashback to when he was younger. It's pretty much like the Indiana Jones trilogy. If Nathan Drake comes back to the next game and his son is Shia Booth.
I don't want to play that. No, dude, it'll be Ellen Page.
It would be Ellen Page.
Or maybe they'll have Nolan North or playing his son.
That would be awesome.
Like, hey, Dad, what are you doing here? Oh, no, not much, son. You're too young for this.
What are you, quoting Lethal Weapon now?
Yeah. Oh, my God. No, A Good Day to Uncharted.
A Good Day to Uncharted.
Oh, awful. Hey, okay, can I ask one last question?
Yeah.
If you guys could pick one standalone game that doesn't have a sequel to have a sequel, what would it be?
Wait, what?
If you could
pick one game that isn't part of a larger series to have a direct sequel, what would it be?
Oh.
I am, while he's thinking, I'll answer. there are two that come to mind. Both of them for selfish reasons. I don't even know if there's much to explore. But the first would be Skies of Arcadia. I love the world. I love the characters.
Oh,
and
I love that game.
I do think the idea of space air pirates is kind of novel. So while it may not necessarily need to be the same characters from the first game, I think the world is something that they should examine again. And the other one is probably never going to happen because it's such a niche title. But Sphinx and the Cursed Mummy.
I love Sphinx and the Cursed Mummy.
What is that?
It was released back in like 2004. It's like it's kind of like a Zelda clone, but
it's Zelda meets Mario meets Wario Land, because it's like one of the main characters, the mummy, can take sustained damage,
and he does puzzles, right?
Yeah, you damage him in various ways to complete puzzles and stuff like that. Where Sphinx, who's like a pharaoh or whatever. Kind of has the action aspect where he levels up, he gets heart pieces.
He has a shield and sword, yeah.
Yeah.
And it has an Egyptian theme. So just think Zelda with an Egyptian theme, I guess.
Yeah.
It was made by Eurocom, like, right after they did Perfect Dark, essentially. So it's worked on GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. They did a lot of the heavy lifting that Rare doesn't want to talk about, but... See, personally for me, like, I'm a huge survival horror fan when it comes to video games, and outside of, like, Silent Hill and Resident Evil, a lot of the really good ones don't have kind of dedicated sequels, so one of mine would be Alan Wake, and I know they keep teasing the idea of Alan Wake 2.
That's not gonna
Did
happen.
They do a sequel?
They had a
they,
new Nightmare, but it was
American
like a
Nightmare.
Side story. It wasn't like an actual sequel. I want to know what happens to him immediately after that game, because I love Alan Wake. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but I'm a huge Stephen King fan myself, and I don't know, I just dug it. So I really hope to see more of that franchise, to be honest.
Okay. Justin?
What's the question?
is there any game that's come out that you would like to see a sequel to, or more expansion on? I suppose
more expansion on that has not had a sequel.
Has not had a sequel.
Oh man, Devil May Cry.
Has he?
Wait a minute. What? Watch
DMC. DMC.
Oh, DMC.
DMC. I'm sorry. I should have clarified. Because I'm playing it right now, and it's. It's just so fun, and I want them to see. I want to see what else they can do with this. And it'd be really...
I really love Ninja Theory. I think that studio deserves a lot more credit than it gets.
They really
I don't know
do.
If you guys played Enslaved.
I liked what I played of Enslaved.
Yeah.
But, like, their games just do not get marketed at all.
No. It's
and they've got And they've got some soft... Like, Capcom really didn't have enough faith in them, it seems. And with, was it Heavenly Sword? It didn't feel like Sony marketed this game at all.
Well, it was pretty much a launch title, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, and
they probably felt like they didn't have to because there was
no
chance to buy.
They had it on Heroes for like a brief second, but nobody knew what it was.
Yep.
Okay, so that is it for us this week. Yay!
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. Check out the website. We have a ton of interesting content this week. We have an editorial about DC's overuse of Batman. Trent has his Ask a Dork, which is about prequels, which is fitting with this podcast episode. We have reviews of comics, Metal Gear Rising review. We have I'm doing Tomb Raider 2, Drinking Game tonight. So there's a ton of stuff. Check it out.
Is that the Cradle of Life?
Yes, the Cradle of Life.
Oh, God.
You're going to have a shit show.
Wow, you don't deserve that. You don't deserve that. I mean, I won't take your place, but you don't deserve that.
you can, what was I going to say? Yeah, you can check that out. Vote on Nerd Madness. We're up to round two. Some good lineups, some good matchups coming up. And until next week, I want to thank Trent and Justin for joining us and filling in. Hopefully we get a show next week. I'm actually out of town part of next week, so we shall see. But yes, for
Are you going to PAX 2?
No, I'm going after we finish. For Justin and Trent and myself, this has been Tarzan on the Rocks episode 126.